This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
This week on Dreamland, it's going to be two people, me and a guest. But the guest isn't alive in this world. The guest is in another world. The guest is my wife, Annie Strieber. And the reason is that she has given us a new diary, which I think is incredibly important, and which I wish to discuss with you at some length. This won't be an hour and a half Dreamland. It's late in the summer, and hoping we'll have some listeners and viewers, but it's always a quieter time of year. But it's important that this material be here, and that it stay here, and that people be able to access it forever, because it represents a fundamentally new vision of the soul. And I think this is quite remarkable that after all of these years and all of the thought we have put into it, suddenly someone in the form of my wife, who is no longer with us physically, but is certainly with us, comes forward and explains things about the soul that I have suspected might be true and that are absolutely remarkable. It's a new vision of what we are, is what it actually is. This happened a few days ago on August the 11th, and I was aware of Anne's presence, very acutely aware of her presence, and I hadn't been for a while. And on the 11th, that was the day, the anniversary, the sixth anniversary of her passing. And I was at dinner with friends in the evening and forgot to make any reference to it. Suddenly, later that night, Anne became present within me in a way that I don't think we really have yet words to explain. I guess it could be seen as channeling. I guess that's one way to put it, but it doesn't feel like that. Then again, I'm not a channeler, so I don't know exactly what channeling does feel like. She was very present, and I could hear her talking in my mind. Not as if it was a voice, but as if it was another person thinking in my mind and using my brain, perhaps, to articulate something. I made a recording of it as it happened, and I'm going to, in a few minutes, read from that recording. But before I do that, I want to instead go to a video that was made of me talking about a certain little figure. My subscribers have already seen this video, but I think it's time for everyone to see it and start thinking about it. What it is this. In the Mexican state of Jalisco, there is found an area known locally as Aztlán, or the first place, and by the native people that are there. And in this place, there are found caves with little images in them, little statuettes and some larger images. And these images are of things like drawn on stone, of things that nobody in those days could possibly have known about. It suggests that they are images from people who knew much more about the universe than anyone we know of did then. But what does then mean? Well, Mark Sims, who has bought some of this material, and it's not expensive, you can get it on eBay, bought it and had some impressions of resins that were in the edges of one of the carvings. He had the resin taken out and carbon dated to about 8,000 years ago. Now, it seems possible that somebody could have found 8,000-year-old resin and wiped it on the object to add to its authenticity, even though it's a modern object. But I somehow doubt that. And when you see the video, you'll see an ancient idea of the relationship between the body and the soul that has been really lost for a long, long time. It is suggested, but not overtly, in the earliest religious text we have, the pyramid text in the Pyramid of Unas. But this is a very direct thing, this little object I'm going to show you in a moment. It shows an individual that you're going to think is an alien, but may not be at all, maybe a human soul, sitting and cradling in its hands a human being. And between them, there is a little like a receptacle. And in the receptacle, there is a triangular form. Now, the interesting thing about this figure, and another reason I think it really is ancient, is that unless that form is in the little receptacle, you can't balance the figure. It will never stand up straight. It requires the little triangle to be in the receptacle. Now, I'm going to explain in the video, which very kindly was provided by John Yost of Rhino Pictures, the exact way this all works. Now, even if it is a modern piece, and I can't deny that's a possibility, it's still very important, because whoever made it either had knowledge of this sort of thing or understood the soul in a way and the relationship between body and soul in a very sophisticated way. Now, it has taken me most of my adult life to come to this understanding. And when you hear Anne's words, they're going to make you feel very weird, because we usually think of us, I'm my soul is sort of piggybacking on me through life, and when I die, my body dies, my soul will be me without a body. That's not quite true. It's much more complicated than that, and you know it's true. What I'm saying must be correct for a simple reason. You don't remember your past lives, and I think we do have past lives. I began to understand this at the level of depth that I've come to in recent years, about a year and a half ago, when I had been asking to see my own past lives. And very often when I ask, I get answers, and the answer is usually yes. I usually get what I ask for. Naturally, I'm quite careful about that. In any case, I'd been asking to see them. And what I saw was floating in my bedroom, and I was awakened very abruptly for this, was a series of portraits starting at I guess the one immediately prior to this life, and going all the way down through 11 lives, all the way down into what looked like pre-Roman times. And these were portraits, I was led to understand, of the various bodies that my soul has had over the course of time. And maybe there are others going back much farther, but these are the ones I saw. And when I did this, I sensed a real, really healthy and really interesting separation between my ego and my soul. I was sensing from the level of my soul as best you can, and it's not easy, and I'm certainly not all that good at it. But I was, to a degree, outside of my ego, looking in, outside of Whitley. And I knew then that I'm actually somebody else. I am that which either attached itself to or created Whitley in some way. And it's done that many times over many hundreds or maybe thousands of years. Created these bodies and then sent them into the stream of time so that they will send back the richest possible stream of experience. And that's why there's this cradling in the little figure. The soul cradles the body. And you are cradled by your soul. You're very much loved by your soul. And your soul, you love your soul too, without even necessarily being aware of it. Okay, so now let's look at the little video. And it's just 3.5 minutes long. And then afterwards, I'll get into the latest Anne's diary from August the 12th, 2021. And you can read it on Unknown Country. But I also want you to listen to it, to listen to this, because it's powerful stuff. I think it's capable of changing lives. I think it's maybe one of the most remarkable statements about the soul I've ever heard. And then after we listen, I will discuss it more. First, free Dreamlanders, do support the website. This is not a place where you get a lot of exciting UFO stories. It's not a place where you get a lot of nonsense and lies and spectacular stuff. It's a quiet kind of place. It's a deeper place. It's a place where people are on a true journey, the journey of the soul through life. And what we are doing here is we are trying to perfect the relationship between body and soul so that we give to our souls the food of the rich life that they seek. And that's why we're here. That happens to involve the visitors in many different ways, as well as our own dead. And so the visitors, along with our dead, are what are primarily discussed on this unique website. Do join us today. And here are some reasons why you might think about doing that. Okay, we're back, and now let's look at the little video. For those of you who are listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can go to unknowncountry.com, go to Dreamland, and go to this week's show, and you'll find the video, just of the little three-minute video that I'm talking about now and that you're hearing me talk about now. You can watch it on the website if you wish. You can also, of course, watch the entire video version of the show via the website or the W. Streber YouTube channel. This little figure is owned by Mark Sims, a dear friend who's also been activated by a remarkable experience. We don't know its age, but it's a very valuable little figure. It cradles in its arms this man, a human being. Is this a soul carrying a man? And is the man moving through time while the soul gazes upward into a higher level of reality outside of time? If so, there's a lesson here, because in this little part, there is a triangle. And if you put this triangle in this and put it down on a soft surface, it will balance. But without the triangle, it won't balance. It will always fall. What is the triangle? Well, let's look at this in terms of an ancient law, the law of three, or the law of Trinity. It's a very old law. It's also a very new law in the sense that it is the structure of the atom. The electron is the passive force in an atom. The proton, the active force,
the neutron, the balancing force. The neutron is the little triangle. In the human being, the body is the passive force. The emotions are the active force. And the mind is the force that balances the two. And you keep the flow of life coming in a healthy way. Now, what is this between the body and the soul? This little triangle is something truly huge. Let's go all the way from the atom back to the original idea of the Sphinx. The Sphinx contains three beasts: the bull, the lion, and the man. The bull is strength. It's the passive part of the Sphinx. The lion is courage. It's the active part of the Sphinx. The man is the intelligence of the Sphinx that balances the courage and the strength. When all three are balanced together, the Sphinx's wings spread and the Sphinx rises above life. That is to say, you cease to be identified with the things of life, the politics, the flow of this, how much money do I have, am I sick or well, any of that stuff. You become objective about life and you see life in a state of balance. The little triangle is that state of balance between the body moving through time and the soul gazing upward toward ascension. It's a remarkable and beautiful piece. And whether it was made 6 months ago or 10,000 years ago doesn't really matter. It's a masterpiece.
Now I would like to read to you Anne's statement as I heard it. She says, "I stand ready to teach, and I can teach. I'm not a channel, however. I will not be a spirit guide. I will not give you advice about your material life, but I will help you in your inner journey. Let me show you what I can do with an example. Yesterday, Whitley was thinking of himself as a ne'er-do-well. In his secret life, he has a desperate desperation because he set out years ago to make contact with the element he calls the visitors. This has not been possible for him, and he feels himself a failure. He sees what will happen to the world, and his vision has been very accurate most of his life. But all of his efforts, his books, his public appearances, and so forth, have not succeeded in changing a thing. Now, I wanted to communicate with him about this. I could not make him hear me, so I tried to enter his dream life. To do this, I had to pull from his experience of life things that make sense to him that were related. But there was nothing directly related to what I wanted to say. I tried to talk to him about communication. This caused his dream to take him to memories of being an advertising man. When I tried to talk about his idea of being a ne'er-do-well, his dream turned him into an advertising man called Conrad. When he woke up, he wondered who Conrad was. Why would he call himself Conrad? He is on vacation and has been reading a mystery in which there is a character called Conrad who is described in the book as a ne'er-do-well. In order to get him thinking in the right direction, that's what I had to pull from him. Working with people's dreams is like trying to draw a picture in water. It is very hard working with dreams to do anything that has a lasting effect. But when he finally understood that his dream was about what he regards as his ineffective communication, he also realized that the visitors cannot connect with you until what is necessary is more clearly understood. There are still lots of people shooting guns at them. Talk about useless. Now let me talk about how it feels from our side to communicate with you. First, we have all done this many times before. The bodies, for that's what we call you, the bodies, are facing into the stream of time. We are above that stream. Whitley made a video that shows very clearly the relationship between us and you. It shows one of us, a soul, cradling one of you, a body. You are faced into the time stream and we are looking up into ascension. We are trying to take a journey toward the weightless state known as ecstasy. This weightlessness is not something physical. It is an absence of regrets. If there is nothing binding the soul, it ascends forever. This is our aim, but we cannot fulfill it directly. We cannot participate in your lives directly. If we did, you would see beyond the time stream and you could not live a spontaneous life. Your life would cease to have meaning and would be useless to our own journey. You are not in the habit of understanding the true scale of being. Remember that each of you belongs to one of us, and sometimes more than one of us. We can have two bodies, three bodies, more bodies, and not necessarily on the same planet or even in the same reality, and not necessarily all intelligent creatures. We can build weaves of lives and live them all at once. Some of us are better at this than others. Some are beginners with only one or two lives. Others are masters with many lives over many eons. I am a teacher, but how can I teach you? Get into a meditative stance and just open your mind. I can come to you because I know how to teach. The soul that cradles you can also teach you, but not if you seek guidance or advice about your everyday life. We will not be guides, but there can still be a change. You can become a richer source of life. The little statue Whitley has shows the soul cradling the body. This is the real relationship. This is how it feels. You're very close, and cradling you in arms of love that extend into your lives from outside of time. What I can teach is how to live so that your life experience, every moment of it, enriches your soul. Now, this statement gives a completely new vision of the soul, I think. I'd never thought that a soul might be, in fact, running more than one body at the same time, let alone that a soul might have human bodies and non-human bodies and bodies of intelligent creatures and bodies of other creatures all at the same time. When I got to understand that my soul is not me, but rather my soul is in love with me and using me to gain strength and energy, using Whitley, I began to feel a very deep sense of this other presence that also is me. Like Anne said after she died, one of the things she said that I think is so important is, I'm not Anne anymore, but I will always be Anne for you. My soul and that soul have become married at some point in our relationship between me and Anne. The two souls married also. And I sense this very clearly. That's why I wear both rings, because I think that I'm my soul, the soul that is cradling me through life, and the soul that cradled Anne through life, are literally married on a higher level. And that's why this is happening this way. That's why I have such extraordinary communication with this soul, with this other soul. Because this other soul
is my marriage partner. I can't say wife or husband because I'm not quite sure how it works in that level of reality, if those sexual differentiations even exist. But we're together in such a profound and lovely way. And in this, Anne is fully present because every detail of Anne exists still in the being of that soul, just as every detail of each one of us is being transmitted as we live in the sweep of time into the soul that has created us or perhaps attached itself to us at some point. I don't even know if souls come and go, but why not? They may. In any case, the thing that's so fascinating is that this is a completely new and, I think, quite objective look at the nature of the soul and the nature of the relationship between body and soul. Now, continuing on, I would like to talk a little bit about my relationship with Anne and how it works and why it is as it is. We had, in this world, a very profound and deep marriage. She was capable of really, really devoted love, and I guess I am too. And our love was cemented in many ways by the communion experience, and also by our journey through the Gurdjieff work together for 15 years between 1970 or 1969 and 1984. And it became another kind of union. It became a sort of alchemical union. And to talk about that, I would like to go now to the 21st card of the Tarot of Marseille, which I discuss in my book, The Path, and which I'm hoping this fall I will be able to put up for subscribers on unknowncountry.com, the entire journey of The Path, because there's no place on earth except in that book that this journey is explained in the way that it is. And I'm quite sure, for various reasons, that it is the original intention of the set of cards that has become known as the Tarot of Marseille. In this card that we're looking at, you see a figure surrounded by a wreath in three colors representing the three forces of balance. The figure is androgynous. You can see that it has breasts, yet it looks like a male face. There are some female elements in the hair, for example. It carries the magician's wand. And if you can just see it in its other hand, the garter of the seeress. So its midriff is covered in such a way that you can't see its genitals. So it's two in one. Anne's motto in our life was two are better than one, and a cord of three strands is not quickly snapped. She crocheted that for a sampler before our marriage in the weeks prior to us getting married, and it's still to this day on the wall of my bedroom. It's a quote from the book Ecclesiastes. Around the four corners of the card, you see the four beasts of the Sphinx, the bull of courage, the bull of strength, the lion of courage, the man with his angelic presence, his deeper soul, and the eagle flying above everything. And what happens is this: when the strength of the bull matches the courage of the lion, they are matched by the intelligence of the human mind, then they become objective, and their wings spread, and they soar above the common cares of the world and see the life in a much larger way. And this is essentially what our journey was and is. Now, as you know, if you've read Afterlife Revolution, and I hope if you haven't read it or listened to it, you will. It's a very important and valuable work. It's the first book written in an objective and coherent way by two people, one alive in the physical and one alive in the non-physical, and working together. And it really was done that way. It's not a, this isn't a fantasy, I have to tell you very frankly. It's not wishful thinking or anything. We live in a soul-blind world, not a world where there are no souls. That's not the real world. The real world is the world I'm describing. And the things I describe and live are the things of the real world. The world where everyone is sitting back, passively waiting for some disclosure or something, waiting for something to happen, never sure, never taking a step on their own. That's the world of illusion and lies. In the real world, we take steps on our own behalf every single day to increase consciousness and to perfect the flow of energy from the body moving through time to the soul, the part of us that seeks to ascend. Now, after Annie died, she came back very quickly and began communicating with me. I've talked about this many times on Dreamland and in other places. I won't go through it again now. But something happened that I don't think I've ever discussed on Dreamland. About a year later, a psychic I know, or I didn't know at the time, I take that back, I know her now, obviously. She is a woman who has been studied by the government for many years because of her extraordinary psychokinetic powers, which she can very often turn off and on at will, to the point where she's been studied in a laboratory setting. So there's some power there, some genuine power. And she kept seeing a woman in her room, standing there looking at her. And she sees spirits every once in a while, and so she drew a picture of this woman. And she sent it to Jeff Kripal, my co-author on Supernatural. This is the picture, you're looking at it right now. And Jeff didn't, of course, recognize the picture, being Jeff. He should have. He actually had seen Anne many times, or some few times. In any case, he sent it on to Diana Pasulka, who, the author of American Cosmic, who's also become a very dear friend. And Diana recognized it immediately and said, "That's Anne Streber." And they sent it to me, and I recognized it, of course, because this portrait, which I'm bringing up now, was not on the internet at the time. There was another portrait on the internet, but not this one as far as I could tell. So this was what the psychic had drawn, and I realized that Anne was there. She was trying to make contact, but more than make contact. She wants with me, she wants to make contact with you. She wants to teach, and she says, "I can teach." Now, how will you go about that?
Well, I do the sensing exercise. I do it 3 times a day. I do it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I do it at 11 o'clock at night. And I do it at 3 in the morning. Sometimes I'm waked up to do it at 3, but it's not really necessary very often now. Usually I wake myself up. I haven't been waked up last week I was waked up one time by someone blowing on the back of my hand, and another time by some kind of explosive noise, not related to the dreamland we had last week, but something similar. In any case, it doesn't happen very often. I usually will wake myself up and do it. Now, why would I do it? Well, I want to read now something from the key, where the master of the key talks about that very thing. I asked the master of the key, "What are psychics?" He answered, more fully than one would have expected, he said, "A part of the electromagnetic field that fills the nervous system rests a few centimeters above the skin, outside of the body. This field is an organ just like the heart or the brain. It is in quantum superposition, the electrons effectively everywhere in the universe and nowhere specific. It may be imprinted by the information from anywhere and any time. With it, you may see other worlds, you may see the past and the future. You may see into the lives of those around you. You may haunt God. However, the process of imprinting itself causes the organ to cease to be in superposition and thus to cease to be accessible to further imprinting. In psychics, there is either an inborn or learned ability to balance the attention in such a way that these impressions do not cause this organ to become focused into particulate form. The ability to control this organ may be developed." I then ask how, and he answers, "Many practices will work, but the best is to meditate in such a way that the mind is concentrated on physical sensation. This relieves the pressure of impressions incoming from the physical world on the electromagnetic body and enables it to expand." Well, that's very useful, because what I do and have been doing for all of these years, and which many of you know and have done with me at times, or may be doing with me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon every day, Pacific time, is the sensing exercise, where you take your attention, and the human being is rather unique in the physical world because we can control our attention, we can move it. You take your attention away from the flow of impressions, thoughts, and ideas that it's usually involved with, and move part of it to your physical body. What this does is it causes your physical body to become that organ that the master of the key mentioned, to become brighter in another level of reality, more visible. And if you ask for help, and it's the right kind of question, you will get help. Believe me, at least if you're like me, you will not get stock advice. You will not get the numbers for the lottery. You will not get a new car. You will not get a parking place. You will not get any of that stuff. But if you ask for understanding that will advance your journey and improve your relationship of the body and the soul, yes, you're going to get help in all probability. It doesn't come, usually for me at least, as a whispered voice, although that happens as it did with Annie recently. It happens, but very rarely. It will come from me more often in the form of synchronicities in my life that I have to notice. One person I know very well, very dear friend,
who's also a writer, has recently had an enormous experience of having a big, bright light come into their room during a meditative experience. So that does happen to people, not usually to me. Before I started this part of the show, I took a rest and something came down onto my body and gave me energy. That happens to me very often. It's a lovely sensation of sort of a gentle vibration coming down onto my body, and it's very caressing and lovely, and that happened. Now, in any case, the psychic, as you saw, had some kind of connection to Anne, and still does. And we can too. And the reason I'm doing this show is she said she's ready. She wants to teach. And she's ready. She was a teacher in this life, actually. She loved to teach. She taught elementary school for a long time. She was a graduate of the Bank Street College of Education, a very distinguished teaching school, and had an MA in early childhood education. And she was just a natural-born teacher. She just enjoyed it, and she's good at it, and she still is. So if you want her in your life, I think you now have enough information to start on a quest to engage with her as a teacher, as your teacher. So I'm going to end this dreamland here. This has been a lovely experience for me in my life, what has happened recently, and I think a very powerful one. And I'm glad and grateful for the opportunity to share it with you. I'm so glad that you would stay with me and that you come to me and to my show. Not many people do. I have not got the hundreds of thousands of subscribers that I might like to have. And the reason is, this isn't for a large number of people. It's for people who have a hunger to feed their souls in a new way. That's what Unknown Country is for. That's what the visitor relationship, as it has evolved in my life, has become about. And it started hard, boy. They weren't fun or easy to deal with at all. But this lovely, gentle, deeply passionate and highly intelligent journey I am on with them now, I would not trade for anything. And my partner, Annie, on the journey with me also. What a blessed life. And you with me too. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you do this with me. Well, next week on Dreamland, we go back to the usual vibe, and we have a very exciting show for you planned. Richard Dolan is going to be talking with us on the alien agendas. Should be fascinating. I've got a lot of great shows planned for the fall. Stay with Dreamland. Tell your friends. There really is nothing like this show anywhere else in the world.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Our theme music is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander.